You are tuned in to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Lauren holds an honorary doctorate from the California Institute of Integral Studies and the Gandhi, King, and Ikeda Peace Award for her work in bringing people together in creative, peace-giving ways. She is also on the editorial board of Presence Magazine, a publication of Spiritual Directors International. We'll probably be discussing the book that I just read today. I just finished it today, called Walking a Sacred Path, Rediscovering the Labyrinth as a Spiritual Practice. And let me tell you, it's a wonderful book. I highly recommend it to everybody. So let's welcome Lauren, who is the pioneer of the labyrinth now. Hi, Lauren. How are
you? Hi there, Lance. Nice to be on the show.
Good. Well, it's great to have you.
Well, thank you.
You know, I have to laugh because we've been having our own experience in the labyrinth almost all day, haven't we?
Well, it's been a confusing day, but I'm glad we're here.
Me too. There are so many aspects of the labyrinth that I want to delve into, but just to bring everybody up to speed, it's probably a good idea to begin with you explaining briefly how you became involved and when.
Sure. Lance, you know, one thing might be helpful for your listeners who may not know what a labyrinth is. Let me etch it in the people's minds, if I may. I would describe a labyrinth as a large circle, about 40 feet in diameter. They can be larger, they can be smaller. Usually they're circular. And they have one path that leads from the outer edge in a very circuitous fashion into center. And it's often confused with a maze, so I want to get that out of the way right away, that it's not a maze. It's actually, you can say, a maze is designed to confuse you and to lose your way, and a labyrinth is designed to find your way. And so that's just so we can tune our listeners into kind of seeing that in their own mind's eye.
Mm-hmm.
How I got into the labyrinth was actually I was working at that time at Grace Cathedral, and I was in charge of the congregation, and I knew that we needed large group spiritual activity. We needed something everybody could do together. And this, of course, is not apart from the worship services, but indeed I was working a great deal with the whole community of San Francisco. And actually, this is the time where the AIDS epidemic was coming in a great energy toward us all. And it was a time of great confusion and worry and loss. And so many people came to Grace Cathedral. And the labyrinth helped people because it's a walking meditation. And so that was the main reason that I gravitated toward it.
Now, the original labyrinths were installed. This actually involves sacred geometry, and it goes back to the Knights Templar and the cathedrals at Chartres and in Europe as a spiritual tool. Went over to Chartres and had your impressions of the labyrinth from that originally, yes?
Well, right. We actually, during the Middle Ages, out of the 80 cathedrals that went up during the flowering of the Middle Ages, 22 of them had labyrinths. And the one in Chartres is the only one remaining in the nave of a cathedral in its original form. There's a couple that are not in their original form, and there's a couple that are not in the nave, the main body of the cathedral. So Chartres, the labyrinth in Chartres, was placed there in 1201. And for the most part, it's been covered with chairs. Research says either right after the French Revolution or perhaps even earlier than that. And that's why we call it a rediscovering the labyrinth, is because this wonderful pattern has been sitting under the chairs there. it's been acknowledged. Some people walk it. Some people get lucky when they're cleaning the cathedral floor. But for the most part, it was covered.
Oh, that's terrible. Well, of course, that's kind of a symptom of this age of electronics and science, that we have kind of disconnected ourselves from spirit, and it's become covered metaphorically with chairs.
That's right. That's right. As since the Enlightenment, these wonderful deep intuitive tools have kind of fell into suspicion, and they became, not part of our world view because the scientific empirical view took over so much.
Mm-hmm.
So these great patterns have been lost to us. They're actually blueprints of transformation.
You know, I was shocked to read. I knew that during the Inquisition and during that period, the medieval church was creating suffocating fears, which mainly played on the innocent and on women. And you quote, you have a figure in there that over a period of several hundred years, 9 million women with some men were burned at the stake for being witches. I had no idea there were so many.
Well, that is probably the biggest amount predicted. Some people just say as little as, 3,000 or 6,000, but I think it was much more extensive than that, and most research says that it was. Again, that's that superstition, and that was when the world was Christianizing itself, and then the people who knew the natural healing powers and had natural healing powers and herbs and knowledge of nature to apply to healing, again, became very, fell under suspicion and, were indeed, destroyed.
Well, I think, isn't that one of the reasons why spiritual information and knowledge had to go underground and it became esoteric knowledge? It was concealed from the masses to protect it through a sacred geometry and symbology, and it was concealed right in front of everybody's nose in, through numerology and various other, the Tarot,
right,
and so on and so forth. And,
it's kind of hidden in plain sight.
Yes, exactly. I was fascinated by your account of Keith Critchlow's work, which asserts that the center of the labyrinth had an engraving of a minotaur, which is interpreted as the devil or our shadow. Can you help us understand the mythology of that aspect of the labyrinth?
Well, and that's up for dispute, too. The center of the Chart Labyrinth, the plaque that was there originally was out of brass and lead and perhaps copper, and was pulled up to be made into cannonballs during the French Revolution. So we actually don't know specifically what was on it, but the biggest hunch is, and some research from other cathedrals say, that the Minotaur was there and Theseus slaying the Minotaur. And the reason a Greek, classical Greek myth would wind up in the middle of a medieval Christian cathedral was that Theseus was seen as the savior, as Jesus coming to save humankind from this very dark, man-eating figure, which is the Minotaur. And then, of course, Ariadne's thread, which sort of gets left out of the story occasionally, but Ariadne's thread was then understood as the guidance or the Holy Spirit that would guide people. So you have the battle between the Savior and either the shadow or the devil, and then the guidance of the Holy Spirit through the thread. And so they surmise that it was there. That's my best understanding of it, and that's how, a classical myth wound up being a centerpiece in the Christian cathedral.
Interesting. Now, some very important aspects of this are cosmology and numerology. For instance, what is meant by the path? I was reading about the 11 concentric circles with a 12th at the center.
Right. See, let me back up just a little bit and put in here about sacred geometry. You're right that during the Inquisition and then even earlier in the Jewish cultures, a lot of the mystical understanding was driven underground. And it, then it did get into numerology and different ways of secretly encoding meaning. But sacred geometry, in my understanding, is that came out of the great master masons of the era. And sometimes we know of them as Freemasons, but they were indeed, well before they were organized, but they were creating these great cathedrals. They actually moved from in teams from different cathedrals. So they might work in Chartres Cathedral until they ran out of money, and then they'd go up to Amiens and then come down to Bayeux, and all of these cathedrals had labyrinths. But so sacred geometry was a way of understanding, and yes, it was a cosmology. And the basic tenet of sacred geometry is that everything is in proportion to everything else. So the labyrinth isn't symmetrical, but it's very much in tune because everything, again, is in proportion. And so that element of it, I wouldn't equate, it's based on sacred number. And of course, sacred numbers are your prime numbers, the 3, the 7, 11, the ones that cannot be divided by anything, any number but themselves. Mm-hmm. And so 11 then comes toward us because the labyrinth has 11 circuits. We talk about circuits, not paths, because there's only one path.
Mm-hmm. Now, there's also, when you walk the labyrinth, there are curves. And I was fascinated to read that there were 34 turns on the path, 6 are semi-right angles, 28 are 180-degree U-turns. And I couldn't help but think of the aspects of astrology, you know, where they talk about various inclinations and so on and so forth.
Right.
Do you think this was intentionally? Well, of course, it was intentional. Is it intentional to say divine archetypes, or could there be an astrological connection, or is this
well,
again,
actually,
part of
yes, indeed, there was. It was their understanding of the cosmology at that time, and if you go back to some of the early manuscripts of Cicero, in fact, which was held at the great library in the school of Chartres. There's actually planet names on each of the circuits. And at that time they only knew of, I think it was 8 planets, and then they named the last 3, the soul, mankind, and they used that word rather than humankind, soul and the world. And so it really was a way of understanding, the universe at that time. The turns, you're right, the turns, see, it's been proven, and we know empirically that the mind quiets down when people are walking in a spiral pattern to a stabilized center.
Wow.
And that's exactly what the labyrinth, that's what happens in the labyrinth when you're walking.
Interesting. It really does seem like a wonderful spiritual tool, especially at this time when our minds are constantly barraged with television and commercials and signs and do this, do that, and cell phones and so on and
That's
so
right.
forth.
That's
you
so
know,
true.
We've lost our ability to, or we're losing our ability for imagination, which you talk about quite a bit in your book, and mythology, and although that's coming back with the movie Avatar, I guess. I haven't seen it yet, but it seems like that's the beginning of something approaching the storytelling and the myth.
Right.
Do you think that you're at the very beginning? It seems like we're at the end of an age and possibly the beginning of another one. Is it possible that the rediscovery of the labyrinth is just the tip of the iceberg of reconnecting to spirits?
I sure hope so. I sure hope so. From the perspective I was seeing, we started this work in 1991, and it felt to me very much that the New Age movement, which was very, very important because it opened consciousness, it opened up people's minds that there's another world, there's another level to our everyday world. But the New Age movement sort of ran out of gas because it didn't have content to it. Or it didn't have grounded experience or an embodied spirituality. And that's what the labyrinth does, is that as you're walking it, it very much grounds you in your body. It brings you home to yourself. and then you can use it in whatever way you want. You can simply use it to quiet your mind, to be able to think deeper and more profoundly about your life. Hospitals are using labyrinths for stress reduction and to integrate mind, body, and spirit. Prisons are using it. Parks, schools, whether college campuses or elementary schools. So it has many different applications, but indeed what it is doing is allowing us to find and have and build an inner chamber within ourselves so we can quiet our minds and not be seduced by the bombardment of the advertising industry.
And I would add the greed and corruption and the wars and violence.
Yeah, I was going to say that. I didn't mean to do a short list. There's a long list of, when you think about it, Lance, our attention is the most highly prized commodity in the world. Our attention, what we pay attention to.
Yes, boy, you're right about that one.
See,
and unfortunately, we have too many, in a materialistic world, our attention is intentionally being grabbed so that to become consumers. You know, we need to become good consumers.
That's right.
Well, I think we've got a PhD in consumerism. It's time to turn away from the consumer part and move back into the heart and into the divine feminine aspect.
That's right. See, the whole advertising industry, too, is based on developing our appetites. Our appetites for, you know, for possessions and things that we feel we miss in our lives. And, and in an odd juxtaposition, that in no way addresses the spiritual hunger of our age.
And doesn't most of the advertising in the male-dominated culture, doesn't that create intentionally and accidentally quite a bit of duality and polarization between everybody?
I think that's true, because we're becoming, when we lose the ability to be quiet within, no matter how we use that, to pray or to release stress or whatever, when we lose that ability, we just fall into one of the other polarities of a dualistic world. You know, good against evil, black against white, all of that kind of stuff goes on in a dualistic consciousness. And that's one of the beauties of the labyrinth. Now, we're talking mostly about the Chart labyrinth, but there's actually earlier labyrinths as well. The classical seven-circuit labyrinth is 4,000 to 5,000 years of age. And this is
where is that located?
Well, you know, this is actually the labyrinth more referred to in the Minotaur and the Theseus myth. But there never was one on the Isle of Crete at that time. They think actually that was the Palace of Gnosis that did have a dungeon in the bottom of it, was 2,300 rooms. But that's a much earlier pattern. We see it as a Hopi medicine wheel. It's in the Celtic tradition as well. It's the never-ending circle. And so there's many different forms of labyrinths. But the Chart labyrinth, I think, is very specifically designed before Descartes walked this earth, before we fell into the Cartesian dualistic understanding of the world. And so it left us a map. It's a psycho-spiritual technology that left us a map to integrate mind, body, and spirit.
It's really quite a profound tool, isn't it? Now, you mentioned, I saw one of the pictures in the book shows what you describe as a labyrinth. It looks like a double axe symbol.
Yes.
Can you help us comprehend that? It seems that that's more of an hourglass shape, and as I was picking it up, it seemed like it had something to do with the divine feminine, perhaps the womb of creation or something.
Right. I think, you know, labyrinths are, because they're connected to the earth, the classical one certainly is, they're connected to the earth. The Chart style one has such, as you mentioned, the wonderful 180-degree turn. So you really, it's quite an undertaking to walk a labyrinth. And sometimes when people step into one, they're surprised that it's quite such an undertaking. But the double axe, you could say that, some people call them a butterfly, but they're on the turns. They divide the turns, the 180-degree turns. And in some traditions, that's seen as a symbol of women's creativity, of the sacred feminine. There are many ways of understanding that.
Well, it seems fairly obvious that the divine feminine was intentionally written out of just about all forms of spiritual teachings and religions.
Yeah.
How can we, I guess this is one of the ways that we can reignite it, but how can we, you know, move away from the patriarchal aspect and the linear kind of logical domination that it creates, and more into the intuitive and right-brained creative aspect,
right,
that can develop symbols and colors, and, you know, it's not quite so demanding.
Right. Well, we want to move to encouraging the right brain, which is, you know, story and art, and it's process instead of content. It's movement. Whatever way you can be embodied. And that's one of the really strong aspects that the labyrinth offers. Instead of talking about what it means to have a feminine experience, or I like to use the word receptive because I think that communicates more. You know, we're in a patriarchal society when it's push and it's drive and it's achieve and it's compete, and the labyrinth allows you to actually experience in your body what it means to be in your own flow instead of forcing, what it means to cooperate, because you meet people on the path when you're walking it with a group, instead of compete. And so those are really important elements, and a lot of times we talk about the sacred feminine, but we don't actually know what it means in the body. And this is actually, Lance, some of the new work that I'm doing with the labyrinth is working with embodied wisdom. We have a workshop coming up called The Spiral of Transformation up at the Institute for Noetic Sciences in Petaluma, California, coming up in March, just for this very reason, because you need to bring it into your body. You need to use your voice. You need to be able to move freely, spontaneously, not under someone else's direction. And so we use a lot of music, we use storytelling, we use dance, we use whatever, and labyrinth walking, of course, because we need to bring that experience of receptivity, flow, cooperation into our bodies.
Mm-hmm. And then, of course, that spirals out to affect everybody when we're able to do that.
That's right.
Now, where did you say you were going to be doing that? That's going to come up in March.
The Veritas offices are actually up in Petaluma at the Institute for Noetic Sciences, and they have a retreat center up there. It's a lovely retreat center, and so we're doing this workshop on the 19th, 20th that weekend of March.
How can people find out more about that? I'll ask you again at the end of the show, but can they write you, email you, or go to your website?
Go to our website, which is Veriditas, so www.veriditas.org, and you can look under events there.
Wonderful, wonderful. Let's see, where do we want to go from here? Yes.
Uh-huh.
Go ahead. If you step right in. Well, some of the experiences that people have, and your book has little snippets from people who have written you, and of course you also describe some of the processes that you witness of people who go into the labyrinth, and of course it ranges from healings to people who have past traumas and wounds coming up, some break down crying. Some see angels and Jesus. Would you like to share some of the more profound experiences that you've seen happen as people do this experience?
Sure. Well, there's so many of them. Sometimes my mind goes like, oh, my heavens, which one to choose? But in the book, I wrote the book in 1995. It was, again, republished in another printing in 2006. Along with Sacred Path Companion, which is a guidebook to helping people use the labyrinth. But right after we opened the labyrinth, I got hundreds of letters. just hundreds of letters. It was amazing. And that's what I had, when I was writing at that time, I think I had around 300 letters, and I could only pull out, you know, so many stories. But I certainly remember the man who was just really feeling dry and caught, and you know, life wasn't going anywhere, and he was just dried up inside. In fact, that was the image he was using. And, you know, that's a part of the spiritual journey. That is, you know, arid, dry, sometimes people call it the desert experience. But mm-hmm. he was feeling that for months, and then he went on in and walked the labyrinth, and it was like the floodgates opened, not only in tears for himself, but also that, you know, it was like finding an oasis. That desert was then, you know, had gentle rain on it for the whole rest of the time, and it just opened him up and deepened his spiritual path and got him out of that desert experience.
Wow. I had something of I've had many mystical experiences, but one of the ones that kind of dovetails into that was about a 6 or 7 year period when I had no connection to anything creative, and I just drove out to the beach at a dark night and brought my dog and wandered down the beach. There was nobody there, and I sat down on a log. It was the only log there, and as I said, got back up again, I realized that a dog or some creature had, you know, gone to the bathroom there. And it was such a juxtaposition and so shocking that it brought me back into the moment, and I looked up at the stars, and the voice said, "It doesn't matter when you wake up, as long as you wake up."
Uh-huh.
And, you know, none of those years were wasted. Every step was necessary to get you to this moment.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
And that's actually what a lot of people feel on the labyrinth, is that they're exactly where they should be in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of us pound ourselves that we're not doing, and it's not coming together, and it's not happening, and you know, and, you know, we're not putting our creativity in the world, or we're not walking our soul path.
Right.
But, you know, many people come into the labyrinth, and it's just a wonderful self-acceptance, a wonderful experience of awakening, because we're doing exactly what we need to do, and if not, you also get direction and guidance to keep moving, take the next step.
And to trust that inner voice, which in the past has been ridiculed as possible demons on your shoulder.
That's right.
You know, and we've been trained to not trust ourselves. And it seems like everything that you wrote about lends to the idea that it's really important to develop self-love, to forgive others, and to remain out of judgment of anything.
Those are all
aspects of ourselves, lower aspects, which keep our spiritual feet nailed to the floor.
Right. Right. And see, and we can't, you know, there's a good psychological principle that's very important, is you have to befriend every part of yourself. You can't get rid of it. You can't throw it out. You can't kill it off. You need to incorporate it and be gentle with it and be conscious of it. That's, again, that awakening feeling. Mm-hmm. And many people find that because in the labyrinth, because the path is very gracious. It's very flowing. It's actually very beautiful. Often I have the privilege of doing labyrinth walks in Grace Cathedral, of course, and in Chartres Cathedral. We do a program over there every May and every September. And so we have the whole cathedral to ourselves. It's beautiful. Really, wow. I mean, I can't describe that building, except it is indeed one of the active sites on the planet as a holy place and as a place in the name of the Sacred Feminine. And we candlelight the labyrinth and have live music, and it brings healing to the imagination. It allows us to see a new vision of what it's like that we're all walking the path together. And that sense of receptivity and seeing that vision somehow deeply, not only deeply inspires people, but people find their soul assignments. People get guidance. People come into the present moment, and that's where there's no stress, and that's also where there's guidance.
Yes, well, it does seem that the guidance that comes to us intuitively is in the present, and it's not necessarily part of the past or the future. It's information that's direct.
That's right.
And I think that's part of what I feel is missing in so many different teachings, is that direct contact to source.
Yes.
And that is the conscious connection or reconnection to that which is higher, and or as above, so below.
That's right. That's right. That's so true, and that is what the labyrinth does. I mean, that's and my job in the world is just simply to introduce people to it, and then I do workshops around it because sometimes people don't know what to do. For instance, a dream can come up in the labyrinth. Many people have dreams either from the night before, or some people actually remember a reoccurring dream they might have had during childhood. And then you walk the labyrinth working with that dream. And that may seem odd to people until they're in that. It's when you're in the labyrinth, you're in liminal space. You're in between the worlds.
Right. That's kind of a shamanic journey, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Walking between worlds.
That's right.
Interesting.
And it's initiatory in that way.
Wow. Do you ever have people who have some kind of flashback to a past life? For instance, we were saying that there were so many people that were burned at the stake. Have you ever had anybody say, "Oh my God, I was a witch in the medieval ages and I was burned at the stake"?
Well, that's a really big phenomenon, Lance, in our world. I think it's a major. I work with a lot of women. I have a small spiritual mentoring practice that I do.
Oh,
and
good.
That is a huge issue with many women who are afraid of their power. It's also one of the reasons many people come to our programs in Chart. It's a subtext. It's not the conscious reason often, or it's not necessarily shared out loud in the beginning. But so many women are afraid of their power. And there seems that there are cellular memories around that. You might use the word past life, but that there's cellular memories that some part of us remembers that, boy, to step out into the world and truly be ourselves, we're going to get it, or we're going to get burned, so to speak. And that's a very important dynamic. That is unfortunately alive and well in the world. And many of us may have some of those cellular memories from Europe and in the past, but there's actually a great deal of that actively happening in other parts of the world now, where women are not allowed to step out, they're not allowed to unveil themselves, all of that, that we're struggling with on
yes.
the planet.
And I know that homosexuality in other countries is sometimes punishable by death, by hanging. And I think there were some Christians who were trying to get one of the South African countries to implement that in their
right,
country.
Uganda.
That's right.
Uganda, yeah.
And it's just horrifying that the church today could say that homosexuality is something that is a sin and needs to be stomped out. But,
really?
Where's the love and the acceptance of the human soul in that one?
Right. See, and that's why it's so important that everyone on the planet needs to wake up, no matter what religious tradition is. And often a religious tradition can block people from waking up rather than help them wake up. But to become conscious that we're sharing the planet, we're sharing resources, we have to walk with respect and honor of other people, even though they may seem different than us. It's a huge lesson. And, it's illustrated. I mean, you're doing it when you're walking a labyrinth in a group.
And it seems that would be a transformational experience that you could not forget.
Yeah, that's right, because it is embodied. There's a wonderful quote from Paul Ricoeur, a theologian, who says, "Human behavior is not changed through moral imperative, but through a transformed imagination." And I think that's so true. And when you're in candlelight and you have live music and you're in Grace Cathedral, we do this every second Friday of the month. When you're in Grace Cathedral walking with other people, you don't maybe know them. Most of the time you don't know them. You might be there with friends. But you get, literally, your imagination transformed of what it would be like for us all to be acknowledging that we're all walking the path together.
And that's really what's happening. We just don't, we're just mired in illusion and we're heavily veiled in consciousness. So we have to do the work of removing our some of our illusions and reconnecting in spirit with one another.
That's right. That's right. And that creates a great deal of upheaval for the person to realize, you know, that they're condemning or they're judging or they're in contempt of people who are different than them. I mean, that's huge. I love Tom Weston's quote. It's a wonderful quote that I use in my lectures sometimes. You know you're creating God in your own image if the God you believe in hates the same people you do.
That's terrific. I love that.
That's a pretty heavy
quote. I have to
remember
that one.
But it's true. It's true.
Yeah.
Part of that waking up is, you know, to come into realizing that we're all in the human form. We all have the same concerns, you know, for the safety, our safety and our family's safety, and that we, you know, have food to eat and a shelter over our heads and friends and community. I mean, it's all we all want the same thing.
Absolutely. And it does seem to kind of, I mean, if I had to boil it down to any one thing, I'd say it all boils down to love.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty overused word nowadays, but that's true.
Well, yeah,
it's
like
true.
God, and, you know, these words, we have to reinvent these somehow, and maybe that will be part of the process of the old paradigms breaking down and new ones being discovered.
That's right, and that is what's happening, for sure. I mean, we are changing paradigms. We're moving out of the patriarchal, and we're moving out of the enlightenment grip of empirical science, into a deeper understanding of the universe and who we are. And it's pretty amazing to me that the labyrinth, certainly the one I'm using, and all archetypal labyrinths, you know, predate this, you know, terrible, and necessary, evolutionary step that we took in the Enlightenment.
Absolutely. How many labyrinths have you been able to pepper across the globe so far that you're aware of?
Yeah, that peppering the planet image came one morning when I was eating scrambled eggs, and, you know, I put pepper on them, and there was pepper all over my eggs, and I kept thinking, that's what we need to do with labyrinths. Well, we're on our website, Lance, there's a labyrinth locator, and there's about 3,500 labyrinths on that locator. So
wonderful.
You can, pardon?
I said that's wonderful.
Well, you can go in there and, you know, type in your location, your city or zip code or whatever state, and then find a list of labyrinths wherever you are. And I'm pretty safe to say that, you know, there's labyrinths near you, whether you know it or not. And
I'm about an hour and a half away from yours at Grace Cathedral, and I'm kind of a recluse, so I don't get out out of the city too much. But if I do go down in that direction to visit, the labyrinth at Grace will definitely be on my list of things to do.
Well, just go on the labyrinth locator. I'm sure there's one near you. You're in Placerville, right?
Yeah. Oh,
yeah.
You mean there might be one up here?
Yeah. No, they're up. They're everywhere.
Oh, good. I'll do that.
I say
I'll
that with great
that.
Confidence, but it's true. And out of now, since the labyrinth movement has started, and really, I guess, you know, there were some, people working with the labyrinth before I was. Certainly, Sid Lonergan, Richard Feather Anderson, Alex Champion, Jeff Sayward, many people working with the labyrinth. But what I was lucky to do was that I had a place to put it that people here, lovely, large tourist cathedral, that people came to in the middle of San Francisco. And so they could come and make sure that they were going to be able to walk a labyrinth instead of just temporary ones that were put in. And that's what helped offer the experience. And then many people started creating and building labyrinths from then.
Ah. Now, I want to bring up something that you said in your book that I felt was one of the most profound statements of the book. And I just want to read this. And you said, "One does not become enlightened by imagining figures of light, but by making the darkness conscious. The shadow has to come to the light. Getting to know our shadow is the most important spiritual work we can do at this time."
That's right.
I just was blown away when I read that, because it seems to, that is a prerequisite for us to move forward in our awakening process, to become more conscious.
That's so true. And actually, that's a quote, or building on a quote from Carl Jung, we can't imagine beings of light. I mean, that's not enlightenment. Enlightenment is bringing what's unconscious to be conscious. And that's another way of describing waking up. Or becoming awakened. But that is, Lance, I feel, the challenge. Many people feel the challenge of our day and age is to stop projecting outside. I mean, I think people don't understand that this is what happens. But when you are in a meeting and somebody irritates the heck out of you, you know, usually we go ahead with the irritation rather than asking, is there a part of that person inside of me? And and that's projecting something we are unconscious of.
Oh, absolutely. Whenever I'm irritated, that's like a red flag goes off. Okay, what is it in me that's being triggered?
That's right.
It's the first question that I ask. What is it in me? Because believe me, if you don't go in there and try to see what it is, it will keep coming back and back, only it usually gets more intense and more painful until you just can't deal with it anymore and it hits you on the head with a brick.
That's right. That's right. Until the universe decides to give up on you and throws it at you.
Well, yes, some people have turned pretty far away from the light, it would appear.
That's true. And yet, you know, the more we bring in and do that process of shadow work. See, and you can take that kind of question into the labyrinth. And this is what The Sacred Path Companion is about. It's kind of a guidebook that backs up my first book about how to use the labyrinth. But you can say you're irritated with somebody. You can take that into the labyrinth. You always have to find your natural pace. You always want to let your mind quiet. And you cannot impose this upon yourself if you're not ready to work with it. In other words, you know, you can't go into a labyrinth with an agenda. That's
right.
You know, that doesn't work. We've been taught that, but it doesn't work. But what does work is then gently bringing that person to mind and exploring your irritation. You know, what is it that is so irritating? And then see if there's other people in your life who reminds you of, and then let yourself see when you are doing that same behavior that's so irritating.
And
that usually unhooks you. That usually brings an aha experience, like, ah, I get it.
And then that's a joyful process.
Well, it is. It is.
It's a voyage of discovery.
That's right. Exactly. And that's what the spiritual journey is about. I mean, you know, we're all on a path. We're all on a spiritual journey. We're all making the pilgrimage from birth to death, and some people believe certainly rebirth, or the wheel comes around again. However we hold that in our belief system, the actual work is in the present day and in our present moments on Earth, that we really need to look at where our shadow is, where our dark spots are, that either hold us back or keep us projecting. See, and this is what the issue is when we are projecting onto other people that there's enemies and that we hate them and they hate us. You know, that is, as we know, really, really dangerous stuff.
It is very dangerous. And it seems that certain people who work on controlling the masses know how to throw gasoline on that fire.
That's right. That's right.
So we have to be, we have to be able to step back and not be attached or identified or taken aback by these experiences. And that's where not judging comes in, and just try to see everything objectively as if we are observing it from outside of the experience.
Right. See, I think the real trigger is fear.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the
oh,
trigger.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
We get our fears mobilized, you know, and then it triggers all the projections that we haven't worked through within ourselves.
That's right. That's right. Absolutely right. Well, you know, I could go on talking to you for the rest of the night, and I've got questions galore, so we'll have to have you back. But I want you, before we end the show, to be able to talk about where you're going and what you're doing and what you're working on and share some of that with the audience before we have to go.
Sure. Well, thanks for the privilege of that. I mentioned about the Embodying Wisdom or the Spiral Transformation Workshop we're doing up at Noetic Sciences, and I've been working with Marion Woodman's Body Soul Rhythm Method, and it combines beautifully with the Labyrinth. So that's what we're doing in our retreat on March 19th, 20th, and 21st. Also, I'm teaching over in Chartres. Lance, we've had a program over at Chartres Cathedral in France since 1999.
And oh, my goodness.
So we teach over there. I'm teaching Living an Authentic Life, and we have seminars in the morning and small group process, and then in the afternoon we do an education about Chartres Cathedral. We have a tour of the crypt in English, which is rarely done. We learn about the cathedral windows from Malcolm Miller, the famous guide over there. And then we have an exquisite private labyrinth walk evening in the cathedral on Thursday evenings. And so it's a wonderful program from Monday to Friday, and then it allows people to travel and experience Paris or wherever other parts of Europe they want to go. But it is life-changing, and there's no other way to describe it than life-changing.
Well, I wish I could join you there, but I'm going to have to be joining you in spirit, I'm afraid. But I would encourage anyone to do that with you. I mean, I can't imagine anyone I would trust more or want to be a spiritual mentor and guide than you. I think you'd be so wonderful to experience a spiritual experience with like that.
It's quite amazing.
I bet. Well, before we go, one more time, would you share your website with us?
It's Veriditas. There's two, actually. I have a personal one, so people can Google my name if they want to find out about spiritual mentoring and all. Veriditas is obviously veriditas.org. And we train facilitators. That's another program we do. We actually do that over in Chartres as well. There's labyrinths in 70 countries now, Lance, so... And we've trained people in 22 of them, so we're training
Wonderful.
Away over in Europe.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, that is so exciting, Lauren. I just can't thank you enough for the work you do and for igniting the light of spirit in the world and keeping it alive. So thank you so much for opening our eyes a little bit, and I'd like to have you back again sometime so we can go a little more into depth about this process.
That'd be fun. That'd be great. Thank you
Wonderful.
So much.
Thank you, Laura.
Thanks, Lynn.
And thanks, everybody, for listening.
All righty.
All right. Good night.
Good night.